Welcome to Design Party, your one-stop shop for everything product design. I'm Antonia, and with me is...
Mr. Vitali.
Hello, hello, hello. I will ask you how are you, but we're both a bit beaten up by this week. But anyways, how are you?
Well, I'm feeling all right. I'm happy that I'm finally carved some time for me so that I'm working like my day job from Monday to Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And then Thursday to kind of Saturday, I have time to advance my own stuff. And that's been feeling really nice. How are you?
I want to say congratulations because this could lead to something that you're dreaming of. So I wish you all the best in your journey. I am okay, sleep deprived, very tired. I don't know. Not the best week ever, but I was really looking forward to recording a podcast episode because that is always such a nice moment in a day. I truly enjoy it. And then especially editing after. So I'm really happy that this is happening right now. Let me just put my phone on quiet because some messages started to come. Okay, I think now I'm safe. So to kick things off, let's talk a little bit about... I'm actually quite curious what you think. Yesterday, we could read in newspapers that Nokia is planning to let go 1,400 people in next few years. And 400 and something will be in Finland. So quite a lot. And the rest will happen, well, in rest countries where Nokia operates. I just want to like capture your opinion. We didn't talk about that before, so I'm very interested.
Well, I mean, yeah, the job market has been very, very difficult since I think like late last year, pretty much. And I know that some major consulting companies are going through like even like round two or sometimes even round three of layoffs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can understand it. Like, I think the only consultancies that really aren't suffering so much are the ones that have a lot of like public sector contracts. Mm-hmm. But in the private sector, when the economy kind of takes its cycle that goes downward, then there are a series of delaying starting projects, reducing resourcing, and trying to optimize quote unquote the use of resources. And then this often leads to, if you're working at a consultancy, you have less gigs, but you have monthly salaried consultants who are just sitting there waiting for work, and so that can lead to very expensive losses, and consultancies don't generally have huge savings. So it's kind of structurally leads to this kind of like waves of unemployment. And I would say that currently, yeah, we're in a situation where there's a lot of talented people without jobs, but there's also a lot of people with less talent who do have jobs. So it's not quite so black
and
white.
That was such a bitter comment. I love it.
I don't know. You say bitter. For me, I think it's optimistic. Or like, you know, that no matter what we think of ourselves and our abilities, it doesn't mean that we cannot have employment.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But kind of like getting employed is a skill almost in and of itself.
It is. It totally is. When we are like younger and experienced green in like job market, I think we all did exactly the same mistakes, saw interviews and employment very differently. Fast forward, now that we're a little bit more mature, I think we see things dramatically different. And I absolutely agree that it's a skill. It's like a lot of selling. Everyone is selling. So that's also important skill to have. But you just need to learn it over time. It's not something you can master by... doing a weekend course, and then you're like, okay, I know how to advertise myself. I'm just gonna do that now and get all the jobs.
Exactly. And I mean, like, even different industries will have different things that they value or appreciate. So it kind of, I think that that's maybe one of the first things that you learn is that you can't really mass email yourself into employment, but rather it's very important to kind of like try to think, what kind of a job would I want, and go from there? Because even if you won't land your dream job necessarily on the first go, you have a direction towards which you are trying to strive for. Because I think that especially when we're younger, we're really seeking experiences and just the idea of being paid to do design is so enthralling that we end up in situations that don't really set us up for success. And I think that also can lead some people to completely kind of burn out of the entire profession and go do something else. And that's definitely a shame.
Yeah, absolutely. We just settle for less because, hey, anything is better than nothing, right? Which is sad. I would like to go back to Nokia topic a little bit specifically, because I've been thinking about that company here and there. Why? Because I'm a big fan of Nothing and Nothing Phone. I don't think Nothing Phone 2 is a great device. I tried to have it, but I just didn't like some aspects of it, so I had to return it. But I believe in that company. I think they're going to make awesome stuff in future. They're already making awesome stuff. And they're very smart with their niche, with their audience, and how they market themselves. And I was thinking, if Nokia was a bit smarter, they could have done what Nothing and Carl Pei are doing right now. So I wonder, what is the reason why that didn't happen? Was it lack of interest in like phones since the fiasco? I don't know. I would be very eager to hear what's the reasoning, because I think it's still a hot market. And what do you think?
Well, I think if you look at the history of these two companies, it kind of has the answers, or at least hints of why that may be. I've personally, the more experience I've gotten as a consultant, I mean, although I do primarily service design, UX, UI design, I also do coaching and training. And so we have companies that come to us and have certain ways of working and they want to change it. And I've really seen firsthand how difficult it can be to change fundamental company culture.
Mm, right, yeah.
And so Nothing Phone company, I mean, you know, less than 5 years, right?
Much less.
Yeah. And so the way that you start determines very much how you will end.
Mm.
And Nokia is a very old company. I mean, they didn't even make phones to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, the company has always been run by business people, by engineers. And I think it started more on the engineering side, but then it really pivoted to the business side. And so, you know, Nokia was a runaway success. They had, the world was their oyster. Everyone loved Nokia, and they had a great reputation. They had great quality products, but they sat on their laurels. They saw the, you know, whatever the future may be, it has to have the Symbian OS running it. And, you know, they got attached to certain solutions. They weren't spending R&D on where it mattered. You know, they had the first like touchscreen phones on mass market, but they didn't really believe in the concept. They saw phones through a certain lens, and that worked great in the 90s. But after that, we saw competitors come and start eating their lunch. And, you know, from BlackBerry to Razer, from Motorola, they were slowly gnawing at it. But Nokia reigned supreme. The only thing was that then a company that doesn't have this baggage and more approaches product development through the lens of finding real challenges and then crafting solutions for them came and completely disrupted the entire industry. And so
yeah, that makes sense.
And I honestly, I don't know enough about the Nothing Phone and the company behind it to make you know, give educated opinions on it. But I think that, you know, they are a company that seem to be very good at taking what exists and putting it in an innovative and, dare I say, like youthful package,
yeah.
You know? And I think that that's a wonderful way of approaching product development. But is it enough to disrupt markets to become a leader? Perhaps not. But if they are able to be, you know, I think that their advertising, their branding, the way that they go about their, you know, they have this like translucent packet or like product design. It's kind of like
different.
A nice, it's different. And it really melds the world of like engineering and design together in a nice and funky way. So I hope the best for them, but I just know that kind of like with televisions, like mobile phone margins are desperately low, and it's very difficult to survive in that industry.
It is, and I don't know if they plan to become a leader. Probably not. Maybe they do. Who knows what are the long-term plans? Carl Pei showed before that he is capable of making very impactful business with phones before, so maybe it happens again. I was just thinking, like, we all feel like a bit nostalgic towards Nokia. We all had Nokia 3310.
I had the Nokia N-Gage back in the day.
Wow, I'm so jealous. I always wanted to have N-Gage. Oh my God, so much jealousy.
I love that phone. It was so great. You know, it had that SD
rub it
card.
In. Mm-hmm. What else?
All those different games.
Mm-hmm. Mm. What else?
But I mean, I think that that's a great example of like the mismatch between, you know, aspirations and reality. Because Nokia, when they made the N-Gage, which was this like gaming-focused phone, they thought, okay, gaming is young teenage boys. And so from the design of the phone to the game selection, it was for a very specific, let's say, worldview of who the consumer for this will be and who will resonate with it. And, you know, they thought that they're going to bankrupt Nintendo with this new cell phone. And that really shows the hubris and the mismatch between, you know, imagining you know who your customer is versus finding real issues that pertain to large swaths of populations, because that's how you get the breakthrough.
Yeah, I'm wondering, completely agree with that. And I'm wondering if this personnel sweep that will happen in Nokia is kind of related to this. Are they trying? I wonder if they're trying to get rid of like these old people who can't really contribute to business that much because they just see world very differently. Or are they gonna remove youth from the company yet again? Like, I'm really interested to know more, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't really actually even know how Nokia is structured nowadays, because I know that they do a lot of stuff in like mapping and telecommunication powers
5G
and stuff.
Is their thing.
Yeah, and I think that like their mobile division was pretty much sold to that HMD Digital or whatever that Chinese company is. So I think that there's definitely, you know, like companies after they kind of have their pinnacle and they come down, there's a lot of this like spinning in place and trying to optimize the resources that still exist and have value. I really don't know what we can expect from Nokia except a slow trend downwards, because it really isn't built as a company for innovation. You know, you think about like Microsoft, when they started to really lose, after they were done gutting Nokia and trying to make, you know, the Windows phone happen, you know, and how their gaming division was going down, Windows adoption was decreasing. And they did this pivot to like cloud services and you know, the Office 365. It's no longer a single one-off thing. It's now an ecosystem. And they really succeeded in that pivot. You know, you look at like the Azure cloud service platform.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Their movements in AI with their collaborations with OpenAI. They managed to successfully change the fundamental ethos of what they were focusing on. You know, they still had their mission of wanting to help digitize the world and help people collaborate and succeed in business. But they did shift from like, okay, we are selling software licenses to we are selling services that empower businesses and people. And I think that, you know, what did that require? A huge, very public unskinning and changing of management and style. I mean, Steve Ballmer and that 90s era Microsoft was quite notoriously famous for the terrible managerial styles that they had. You know, they would have like kill lists that, you know, the 10% of the worst performing employees every X period of time were just fired, you know.
Disgusting.
I mean, it's terrible. It's like the worst. It's surprising how much they succeeded when you look at how they got to where they got to.
Yeah.
But yeah, like changing that radically required huge amounts of investment, and I would say that it was a crapshoot. It really could have as easily failed as it did succeed.
Absolutely. And I think you mentioned like questionable, like very very questionable ways of managing people And I think this is maybe a good segue into maybe talking more about the job market, because I see that more and more people are talking about it, like on LinkedIn or on some other social platforms. And last time I recorded podcast, it was with Helena, and we did talk about like design system jobs a little bit. And we were both curious, like, what are exactly the requirements for that? Because it seems that the whole thing is quite gatekept. Mm. Yeah. My personal impression is that you need to have like actual role in your history of working that says designer in design systems team in company X. And without that, you're like automatically rejected, catapulted out of the process like immediately. Mm. And I was trying to find reasoning for that. I don't know. I would really love some answers. It's a very curious question for me. Like, I never seen such mystique around certain roles. So I would like to hear your opinion. Why do you think, I don't know if you ever thought about it, but what do you think, what's up with design system jobs? Like, have you heard anything? Tell me.
Well, I mean, let's say that I've helped land some successfully sold proposals for developing design systems. Mm-hmm. And I'd say that through that, like, okay, whether we're talking about design systems or let's say like UX, maybe like 5 years ago or 10 mm-hmm. years ago, and even now, depending on where, but the key two words here are risk reduction. So if you are faced with something vague, something you do not know, and something that is difficult to define, you know, that has various definitions, as such as UX and design systems do, if you are a person responsible for advancing this thing, you don't want to get into trouble.
Right.
And so it's kind of like the quote, you know, no one got fired for hiring IBM. and it's kind of like this similar idea. So if you have someone who has, you know, even on paper, this experience of managing or running or building a design system, they feel like a less risky choice than someone who is very senior but doesn't have that within them, you know? So like, even I've sometimes risked our success at getting design system gigs, because I've said that, you know, of all the projects I've had, I don't know how many of them I would genuinely say were a design system, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a very risky thing to say, because on the other hand, you have another, you know, company that's done nothing but UI kits, and they say like, oh yeah, yeah, we've built so many design systems, right. You know? But and so whenever you are trying to take the role of an educator, when you are doing like sales, it's always a very risky proposition. And same thing with recruiting, I think that, you know, when you've gotten to the point of putting out a job that you want to hire someone to help build or manage your design system, it's a very tall ask, although I think a very mature thing, to then be open to redefining what a design system is in the process of hiring someone for the job. You know what I mean?
Yes, but I see another problem here. Not every designer will have access to design systems team. You really need to get in some unicorn or some bigger, more mature company that actually has budget for that and somehow claw your way to that team, right? So there's like very limited amount of people in this world who worked some time to make it meaningful in such team. So basically you're just bouncing people, same people around. It seems like that to me. And I was trying to rationalize the role a little bit last time with Helena. So design systems, it's definitely not only fiddling components in Figma. So I think there is like a lot of systematic thinking, knowing your way around code, maybe a little bit, having good vibe with other designers and developers to make things happen, like being very analytical, knowing how to, like you need to be very creative in getting some numbers, some analytics to kind of prove worth of design system as a whole, and also to inspire other teammates to kind of use it and contribute and all of that. So it's actually quite big role. It requires a lot of different skills.
Definitely. But, do you remember my controversial take?
What? I don't remember.
That if a quote-unquote design system only lives in Figma or in some place, single place, it is not a design system.
It's not a design system.
Yeah, to be a design system, it must be represented in design as well as in code, and they must be linked together.
Yeah,
otherwise, you just have components.
Do you want to go to all these design systems in Figma Marketplace and comment, you're not a design system yet? I dare you.
I get enough flack as it is, but yeah, that would definitely be a good way to rack up a lot of likes and a lot of positive support.
Yeah, a little bit of drama. I love drama, so that was...
And I would actually say that if you are a young designer and you are interested in design systems but don't have experience in it, I would say find a developer and create a, very core basic design system, because it'll teach you a lot through the process, and then when you release it, you will have something that you can use as a golden card in the recruitment process. So
they will not hire you for that, I'm absolutely sure. But it's a good attempt, good learning journey.
It's a good learning journey. It won't single-handedly give you a job, but I think that in some cases when it comes to, if you have two equal candidates and one of them has a hobby project that they built a design system with a developer, it will help take you over the edge.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. It will make you definitely a better fit. Talking about young designers, I feel a bit sad for them, because if you check like job boards and... I don't know, if you like scroll back a few years and like compare what kind of jobs are available on the market, I don't remember seeing junior position ever in last, I don't know how many years. I mean, it's not that I'm looking every day, but I don't remember seeing it. Maybe it's different for different continents.
And I have to say, I've seen a few, but definitely way less than I have before. Yeah, yeah. I've even seen like with Witted or like Talented, they've specifically, they've had some job postings where they're specifically looking for juniors.
Oh, okay. Nice.
But it's very rare, very rare.
Yeah. They usually like want to get only like seniors. So it's very good that they also have like some slots for more junior people.
And tip number one, don't say you're a junior designer in your CV.
Maybe. Like, is that a way is that maybe lying a bit? No?
Everyone is a designer. Our job is to learn. So who is to say, at what point are you... Like, of course, if you don't feel like... If you have zero experience, then of course, don't call yourself a senior designer or something like this. But nothing's wrong with just calling yourself a designer and let them be the ones evaluating where your level is.
I would recommend exactly the same thing. I think that's a good way forward. And also these like titles... I mean, they were always out of hand, and they mean different things in different companies, and sometimes they just signify your age, persistence in being in some company. Sometimes it is your expertise. It's a whole thing. So, yeah, that's a great tip to kind of mask the the reality of things, but that doesn't mean that you're lying.
Exactly. I would really suggest everyone to do, as a matter of fact, if you Google Fractio Design Career Canvas Figma, you will find in the Figma community this little workshop canvas that we built for an event we had that was helping designers kind of like figure out and level up their design careers. And so you should try to figure out what it is that you truly want, what kind of roles and responsibilities interest you, even if you're just starting out, so that you have an idea of or a sense of self, a professional self, because you'll never find a company that will give you the lock and key fit that will help you find your true self. You have to find yourself. And then you find what resonates with you within the world. And the more that you develop this idea for yourself of what you're looking for and what you're about, the easier it will be for you to evaluate the opportunities that you find. And then you can consciously say like, okay, this wasn't what I'm looking for, but I'll give this a shot and see how it works out. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's good to have some sort of a center in yourself from which you try to get your employment.
All good stuff. I would just like to keep things real. I really would feel a little bit bad to like hype the people into one direction, maybe raise their hopes a bit too much. I mean, we need to face reality and recognize things as they are. It's a bad situation right now. And if you're a junior, it's not an easy spot for you. I would say being creative and try to, you know, reinvent the way how you present yourself is very valuable. Even if you have like less skills than maybe some peer that applied for the same job, if you are a bit different in your application, in the way how you present yourself online or whatever, that will be interesting, I guess, to recruiters, and they will be curious to know more. It's always good to be different from others. I learned that.
Exactly.
On my own journey.
Definitely. And that's exactly one of the reasons why I advocate so strongly to have that center in oneself. You know, it's kind of like, you know, what are your strengths? It's like, what do you want me to have? It's like, you have to find your own voice, no matter how early and small that may be, because that can also help you figure out where can you try to seek employment. You know, the thing is that some people, you know, they go into consultancies and then they're hoping that, like, because this consultancy is this type, I will have these types of clients.
Mm-hmm.
But then I've seen so many consultants, they start working for a company that they've waited years and years to work for. And then they're like, on one hand, okay, maybe it's not so great. But then others is like, this is exactly what I wanted. And then they do the transition into that company. And so it's like,
legal?
Why? Oh, yeah. I mean, all of this, you know, the companies figure it out. But, you know, when there's good talent and there's money to be made utilizing this person, when the fit is great, then companies are definitely willing to pay for the handoff price of that person.
It's like a football teams and you're like, okay.
Yeah. No, this happens all the time.
What?
At least in Fractio, I've seen this happen many times. But so the thing that I'm trying to say, though, is that, like, you don't need to wade through all of that muck if you already kind of like have an idea of what you want, and then you can just directly approach these companies rather than going to a consultancy and hoping that you get assigned to a case that is similar to it.
Yeah, it's all about persistence and good timing, amazing luck. I'm really trying to keep positive, and when we talk about like job market, which is kind of interesting topic this year, because so many designers worldwide got sacked, and it's not their fault. They were just so unlucky. I'm trying to like keep the positive attitude going, but also offer. I don't think it's helpful if, let's say, we would talk all the time, yeah, you just need to, you know, work harder. Oh my God, that's so triggering. It's not all about that. So I would like these people to know who had a hard year, were in a bad spot, got sacked when they did nothing wrong, but it's just super bad luck. Bad place, bad timing. Yes, things can be shitty, but hopefully we will see some uplift in economy, whatever that means. Do you have any predictions for next year? I mean, this year was horrible for everyone. What do you think it's going to happen next year?
I really think that it can go either way.
Oh my God.
I think that it's good to remember that, you know, the line keeps going up. So even when there are some businesses and industries, even if most of them are losing money, there's also industries where money is made.
True.
And so the idea is to kind of find that Goldilocks zone of things that interest you, that align with your values, and who are hiring or potentially could be hiring, because it's good to remember that like 80 to 90% of all job vacancies or potential job positions never make it to a public forum of like, hey, we're looking for people, you know. So people know people, go talk to people, take people out for coffees, and be passionate about what you do if you can, because that's the best cocktail for, you know, if you are someone who helps align people, bring them together, delivers results and can speak about their process of how they achieve that, then that is someone who will stick out of the crowd.
Good that you mentioned all of these things. Those are very good tips, way of thinking, looking at things. So Vitaly actually had a great idea when we were setting this podcast episode up. We have a lot of tips, very unique, creative ways how to differentiate yourself, put yourself above other candidates, get that next opportunity. So this is a little advertisement right now. So we will create like a little, I will not say PDF because maybe it shouldn't be PDF, but a little guidelines, like tips, hacks, like a little flyer, a little document with all our, you know, knowledge and hacks and guides, how to hack your presentation, how to hack your resume, maybe your portfolio, how to reduce costs of presenting yourself online, all these juicy things into like digestible document. And you can get it just like that for free if you sign up for Design Party Digest, which is this new thing that I'm trying to kick off, a newsletter for designers and internet nerds. Anything to add, Vitaly?
Yes, and not only will we provide tips that are so plenty that we don't have time to go through them here, we're also going to talk about red flags to look out for when you are being interviewed, because just because they want you doesn't mean they should have you. You know what I mean? You have to be able to not end up in an environment where you're like, oh my God, this was a mistake.
Yes. That's something that's always hard to discuss. But yeah, we will definitely put our thinking and our tips and our bullets and whatnot for red flags as well. And green flags. Green flags are great, even better. And I think we have like a lot of experience at this point collectively to really compile a list of things that matter, that are not just a prompt to GPT, but actual tangible experience and tips that come from heart and experience.
Exactly.
That said, you know what? I feel like something is like pushing me down right now, because this is very difficult and scary topic to discuss two episodes in a row. Is there something positive that happened lately in world of design? Have you heard anything?
I mean, I think that generally I cannot overstate how useful AI has been for me.
Right.
You know, transcribing user interviews, helping analyze Excel sheets, writing emails, workshop instructions. It really is a time of innovation. And I hate using that word because it is so used and chewed out.
Range.
But truly, it is. But I have been personally very excited with this AI development and then the systemization of design with design systems, the new mm-hmm. updates into Figma, mm-hmm. aligning it more with code, dev mode. I think that we're at such a golden era of collaboration that I don't think it's any more about the tools. It's the processes and mindsets that we bring to them that
totally.
The biggest sticking point at this point.
I'm a bit more critical when it comes to like new Figma features.
What? Critical? You? No.
Nope. That cannot be. But you know, this comes from passion. It doesn't come from a bad spot. I hope that Figma understands that, because one person a long time ago kind of knocked on my door, not literally, and said like, hey, pipe the fuck down. No, I'm not gonna criticize the tool that's main tool in my work life, and it comes from passion, not malice. I want to make that very clear.
Yeah, I mean, how often do we complain about things we don't care about?
Never. Like, why would you?
It's a love language.
It's a love language. It's a bit problematic, but this is how we can be better. And I don't think when we talk about design tools and practices that we are like techie, it comes from personal experience, maybe a little bit of frustration, but it's all... Yeah, for example, I was just... when it comes to Figma, I had, I think, a great idea. So I work a lot with data tables. And you know that you can group stuff, components, or not... like only in one direction. You will either create like columns or rows and then maybe group them so it's easier for you to manipulate them and create like actual data table in Figma. There should be a better way. I see people complain about this thing all the time. It's very hard. No matter what you try, it's always not good enough for your use case. So I was thinking maybe Figma should introduce virtual groups, basically groups that are siblings. So you can, you know, select columns or rows in a, you know, collect like a group of everything that is a table, representation of a table. I think that way these data tables would be a delight to, you know, manipulate, edit, tweak, make it better, and so forth. I talked a lot. I will just stop for a second. Do you like my idea? I'm like literally curious. Is this stupid or actually great?
I think it's interesting. I definitely agree that grouping components and generally like dealing with many things is far removed from ideal. But I don't know how well it aligns with the ethos of Figma, which is like, you know, if it doesn't exist in code, we're not going to try to build it type of mentality that they seem to be having right now.
I mean, you can do mental gymnastics and find arguments. If you look at arrays in coding, you can stack different things. You can have array of foods and then array of ingredients in food. No, for sure.
You know, and pseudo selectors in CSS.
Yeah.
I definitely get like how, but that's the thing. Like, you know, if they were to build that feature, kind of like how we were asking for tokens, just to have like, you know, syntax that we could use in many places, and then they build this whole system. Are they going to build like a Notion type filtering system, like in order to deliver this one little thing? Because then it can be applied into so many things and be aligned with code. That's like where my mind went with that.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think everything has to be aligned with code because it's definitely not right now. And there has to be like some you know, crossover, some touching point. But also it's a very different way of creating. So I don't see these virtual groups, pseudo groups would be a bad thing. You could have a frame where you want to create a group only of icons or a group only of headings or a group only of like one type of things or a group only of, I don't know, some random selection. I think it would be very helpful. I know I would use it a lot. But when it comes to variables, they're great. Finally, we have them. But yeah, I think it's not something like revolutionary. It's still like a long way like from being actually usable for every company, just like out of the box, just from the get-go. But I think we spoke in previous episodes about variables, so maybe let's not go there this time as well.
Yeah, but hopefully they'll figure it out because, I mean, how many times have we had the situation where we have like a big component group with variants and then someone has dragged some of the variants out and they have become their own component and there's no way to undo it. Oh, it's so much pain. So definitely needs to be updates and a better system than how we have it currently.
Well, absolutely. There are like tons of bugs. But anyways, it's good that we have a tool that's actually advancing our line of work, allowing us to create. That's good. That's always positive. That said, let's wrap this up. I'm very hungry.
And I need some coffee. All I want to say, though, is that like it's for the young designers, especially listening, it's good to remember that Figma, although it is a tool, I would not be the designer I am today without it. Like it really is.
Me too. I can say that. Tool.
Yeah. But, and here's the big but, not a single user sees what happens in Figma. So don't get too transfixed on tools. Focus on processes, techniques, how you work with people and make results happen. That is the fundamental skill set of a designer, whether you're just making icons or you're helping create like end-to-end customer experience systems. You need to try to be someone who investigates, finds issues, and creates solutions for them in a justified and systemized manner.
Well, that's a lot.
Just a little caveat here toward the end.
But yeah, what you say is completely true. And yeah, people should listen to us all. This is a great chat. Thank you for finding time this week to do this. I know that we struggle with finding time a lot. This has always been a very persistent problem in our little trio. For that reason, I wanted to bring in fourth person, but lack of time is the biggest blocker in that. So it's like insanity. So I always like to thank whoever comes to empty slots to discuss design things and the world things or whatever things. I don't have anything smart to say. I'm very tired. Seriously, horrible week. Just want to go and eat something right now. You can sign us off.
Thanks for everyone who tuned in to listen, and hopefully you got some good notes from here. And if it was interesting, we highly recommend going and signing up for the newsletter and getting some more tips, red flags and green flags that'll help you on your journey. And if you have any questions or insights, do send us a message. We'd be more than happy to hear your thoughts and combine it and address it in future episodes.
That would be lovely. Bye.